seems to be. Which isn't to say that you are in the front or any less Presbyterian at all. It's not my intention to imply that. But. So here's what this morning's about, and I'm just going to give you this in a sentence. So if you trail off a minute or two after I begin speaking, this is what you can take away. And this is just the only thing I really want you to take away is this. If you want to know who God is, you look at Jesus. That's it. If you want to know who God is, look at Jesus. Now, I spoke a little bit about this last Sunday, but the idea that, I love the idea of finding a way to have people come into a church who may not be Christian or people that don't sort of share some of our beliefs, and just to come in and learn, just because they might be curious. And just, I'm going to work on that because I want to find a way to do that, to be less, to have a context that's just less intimidating for people just to come in. And here's what we believe as Christians. You may not believe it. You may not be a Christian, but if you're curious, here's what we believe. So, this is what Christians believe, if we identify as Christian. Do you want to know what God is like? Look at Jesus. Isn't that amazing? Mystery solved. Like all the mysteries of God solved. If you want to know who God is, look at Jesus. There's a passage from the Bible. I'm just going to show you a couple of verses from it. It's just this amazing thing that Paul says. There's a lot of amazing things in the Bible. But this is something that just, it's just full of mystery, but yet it's so full of truth. And sort of what Paul is getting at here is it has to do with how people have a longing for God. All people. But not just that, but also that people are, listen to this. I'm going to show you this in a second. But here's what Paul, here's the kernel of it. People are born with a knowledge of God. People are born with the knowledge of God and a thirst for God. So I want to show you this and try to wrap your heads around this. This is just one screen. I know there's a lot of words on one screen, but just listen. What may be known about God has been made plain to them as us, people, because God has made it plain to them. So somehow, what is to be known about God, God has made it plain to people. Like, what does that mean? Listen, since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, so that's all the stuff that we don't really understand, like the mystery stuff, his eternal power, his divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made so that people are without excuse. So part of that was Paul was sort of talking to people in Rome, and Rome was this whole context where people were just, they didn't really know who Jesus was, and they were just kind of doing whatever they wanted to do. It was a very decadent, depraved society. And Paul's saying, look, you don't have an excuse for doing whatever you want to do because God is in you in some way. So there's a lot of mystery to that. There's a longing for and a prior knowledge of God in people. It's almost like we've experienced God before, but maybe in some way have forgot, or it slipped away somehow, or maybe in some way we've just put it somewhere for so long that we've just forgotten about it. It's kind of what it's getting at. Do you know what it's like? I was thinking about this. Here's what I think it's like. It's like touching base with an old friend that you haven't seen for years and years and years. And you get together with that person, and you used to be so close, and maybe it was your best friend, and you get together with them, and you realize how much you missed being with them. And it's kind of like you lived 20 years, and you didn't think about it that much, but then you got together with your old friend, and it's like, man, did I ever miss being with you? I think it's something like that. That people just already have this knowledge of God somehow deep within them. And when they discover God, it's like discovering something that you already knew and how happy it makes you. Or sometimes it's like if you hear a song that you just love, and that song sort of brings you back to 20 years ago to a really good part of your life, and it's kind of, I just totally forgot about that time of my life, and the song just brought me back. And I've lived for 20 years without it, and I haven't really thought about it. But now that I'm back there, I realize how much I've missed it. And I don't know if that's maybe what it's like, that we have this prior knowledge of God. Somewhere deep within us, there's a thirst to get back to a knowledge of what God is like. Randy Bachman, he's the founder of the Guess Who and Bachman Turner Overdrive. I watched a great documentary a couple weeks ago on Randy Bachman. He's got like 300 guitars. He's got this room that is just shelves of guitars. And in this documentary, he'd pull one out, he'd open it up, and he'd say, "Oh, this is from 1969 when I recorded whatever." And I don't really get guitar collecting. Like 300 guitars, they're each worth thousands of dollars. And I'm like, just give the guitars to young people who could play them. That's the kind of work. But anyway, so he's got a show on the radio that some of you listen to. It's called Vinyl Tap. He had a program not long ago where he was playing songs, rock and pop songs, that had a spiritual theme and a spiritual element. Okay, so songs like he played Lean On Me, we do that one here. Spirit in the Sky, Loves Me Like a Rock by Paul Simon, remember that one? Loves Me Like a Rock of Ages. Gonna Serve Somebody by Dylan, Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi, he played that one. We Are Family. So there were all these songs that had a spiritual element to them, but they weren't church songs, they were just rock songs. And later they were saying that show had the best ratings since Randy Bachman started doing Vinyl Tap 3 years ago. And I just think it points to this truth that people have a longing for God. That's what I think. Like, people just have this longing and this thirst for it. Think about the major motion pictures about God and about faith that have just been a part of our culture. Some of them are classics, like The Passion of the Christ, you remember that one. Prince of Egypt was an animated movie, like a kid's movie, but it was so good. Think of comedies, even like Bruce Almighty with Jim Carrey and Morgan Freeman, remember that one? Bruce Almighty, it's kind of like, what would it be like to just be able to talk to God? And it was funny, but it's like, it was just a huge movie. And I think it just points to this truth that people want to know who God is. Son of God was a movie. Russell Crowe was in a movie called Noah. But listen to this. These are movies that came out just in 2018, last year. God's Not Dead. There was a student debating with his atheist professor about the existence of God. Some of you may have seen that. A movie called Stains. And that was a film based on the life of Graham Staines, who was a missionary who was martyred for his faith in Jesus. There's this year, An Interview with God is a movie about a young man who just sits down with God and asks God all kinds of questions. And at the end of that, he jumps up and he yells, "Who are you?" And God says, "You know who I am." There's all these movies just in 2018. God Bless the Broken Road. A movie called Unbroken, 2018, The Star, which was a Christmas movie. I just think it's evidence that people have an interest and a thirst. And Paul takes it even further, saying, you have a prior knowledge, but you were born with a knowledge of God. All the books about heaven that we talk about occasionally, like I don't judge any of those books, but I think they just point to this truth that there's this thirst. And so to satisfy the question, like, who is God, to satisfy that thirst, people just look in all kinds of different places, don't they? I ran into a woman about 6 months ago at the Loblaws. I get a lot of visitation done at the Loblaws. For some reason, in the produce section, and I'm not sure why, but that's how we're always standing over the oranges. But there was this woman I ran into, and actually I married her and her husband about 5 years ago. She said, "Oh, we just always wanted to come to church." And I said, "Oh, it'd be great if you did." And she said, "We were going to a church, but we couldn't go every Sunday. So they sent us letters saying, where are you? And we just felt like they wanted us there every Sunday." And I said, "Well, they were probably just it was pastoral. They were just..." And she said, I'm a very spiritual person, but I get my spirituality in all kinds of different places," she said. There's the temple on Airport Road. She says she goes there. She said she reads different books, Deepak Chopra, you know the one. But she's just saying she gets all kinds of different spiritual experience from all kinds of different things. And I see this all the time, and you do too. People are very spiritual. But what happens is they take a little bit of this and a little bit of that, a little bit of Judaism, a little bit of Hindu, a little bit of New Age, a little bit of self-help, a little bit of God help, and they mix it all up to find God. Please don't misunderstand me. I think there's value in all those other things and other world religions. The problem that tends to happen is when we take from all those different things, we tend to just take the stuff that we want and we leave the hard stuff. That's what happens. We end up with a God who basically just does what we want God to do for us, and we end up with kind of a genie in a bottle God, and that's the God we believe in. See, the true God makes demands of you. The true God, and it doesn't matter what religion and faith base you're talking about now, if it's a true God, that God makes demands of you to walk into other people's suffering and to share what you have with people around you. It's like wedding vows, right? Marriage vows. For better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, you get married to someone and marriage makes demands of you. And so when we make up our old religion, we're missing the most important ingredient we don't even put into that recipe, and that's the problem. So here's what all this is just leading to. This is just real simple. Christians believe that Jesus is the real picture of everything that God is. Now, if you've been a Christian for a long time, and if you have that faith, that just seems really self-evident. It's like, I know that. But for someone who's never heard that before, and for this person who's just looking here, looking here, looking here, and they come into this church, and they may not believe, but here's the teaching that I give people, that this is what the Bible teaches, right? So you want to know who God is? Look at Jesus. Now, sometimes people judge God through things that we do, right? And that can be a huge problem. I know what church people are like, or this person said they went to church and they did this, and this person's a Christian, and I'm like, don't judge God through Jesus' followers' eyes, because we make mistakes. Look at Jesus if you want to know who God is. Don't always just look at Jesus' followers, because we're human and we make mistakes. So we believe that God is like Jesus. And all the prophets before Jesus described in the Old Testament, all of them, Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel, they brought a picture of God to people. They brought this message of who God is. And Jesus believed in those prophets. And Jesus quoted them all the time. And he was from that prophetic tradition. But we believe that all those pieces of that puzzle all came together in a remarkable way in Jesus. Jesus is the fulfillment of God, mystery solved. Life is full of mystery. When I listen to certain kinds of music, I'm reminded of them. Does anybody know who John Prine is? Anybody here? John Prine is an American treasure. He's an American songwriter. He plays the acoustic guitar. John Prine just came out with a brand new album in 2018. It's called The Tree of Forgiveness. And this week I was sitting listening to John Prine, thinking to myself, how could anyone believe there's no God? Because there's just this remarkable thing that happens in his music, the way that he puts words together, and the ways that person's heart can be changed by that music. And we embrace the different things that are full of mystery. The miracle of life, how this earth was formed. When you look up at the stars at night, you embrace these mysterious things. But in answer to one of the greatest mysteries ever, who is God, the mystery is solved. God is Jesus. And I think that's why Christmas is such a special time for people. And at Christmas time, there's all kinds of mystery as well. The mystery of the star. We love that mystery. The angel came to Mary and said, you'll give birth to the Messiah. We love that mystery. The choir of angels singing to the shepherds. We love that mystery. But when we ask, who is God? We now have the answer. Emmanuel has come. God is with us and is Jesus, and that mystery is solved. We're talking about mysteries. When we're faced with things we don't understand, the Bible asks us to turn to Jesus for the answer. When we're just faced with things we don't understand, like why is there suffering? Do you know that people asked Jesus, do people who suffer suffer because they did something wrong? There is this event that happened where a tower fell over and killed, it doesn't say how many people, but a lot of people were killed. And people came to Jesus and said, were those people killed because they did something wrong? And Jesus said, there's no connection between struggle and disaster and faith. There's no connection. Sometimes people with good faith struggle, and sometimes people that have no faith live good lives. But Jesus said this, when it comes to suffering, the better question than why is there suffering, the better question is, what are you doing about it? Look, here's the, have you seen this picture? Let me bring this up. Have you seen this picture? There's a caption that goes with this picture. The young man asked Jesus, sitting on the bench, why do you allow so much suffering in the world? And Jesus says, funny, I was going to ask you the same question. Have you seen that before? I'd love that. If we're faced with things in our lives we don't understand, it's just turn to Jesus and ask. Like prayer. I don't understand prayer. I don't understand how prayer works, people say. Like when we pray, are we harvesting internal energy or are we accessing external energy? And Jesus said, when you pray, pray like this. Our Father who art in heaven. Like God is not, God is something separate from you. God can live in you, but God is something, God is a power that is way beyond something that just comes from inside you. We might say, Jesus, I don't understand. When I have wealthy friends who seem so unhappy, I don't understand that. Like, they have a nice house, they have money, they even have health, they even have their family, and they're just miserable. And I know some of people like that personally do, and I don't understand that because our whole culture teaches it. And then over here there are people that just don't have so much of that, and they seem so happy and so content. And Jesus says, it shouldn't be a mystery to you. Because joy and happiness are not found in money or material wealth or adulation from your peers or social standing. Joy and happiness is found in belonging and in friendship and in giving of yourself and in faith in things unseen. When there are mysteries in our lives, the Bible just says turn to Jesus for answers. Turn to Jesus for answers. Last thing, I read an article. I just found this fascinating. It's simple, but I found it fascinating. It was about a hospice chaplain in New York. His name was Terry Egan. But he was talking about visiting people who are dying. And in this article, he was talking about how people ask him, what do people talk about when they're dying? Like, as a hospice chaplain, what kinds of things do you hear from people who are dying? And people are like, hey, you must hear all kinds of amazing things, like deep conversations about who God is and the meaning of life. You must hear like words about what going to heaven is like and the power of prayer and all that. And this chaplain is what he says. He says this without hesitation. He says, mostly they talk about their families. That's what people talk about, he said, when they're dying. They talk about their mothers and their fathers and their sons and their daughters. They talk about the love they felt, I'm quoting now, and the love they give. Often they talk about love they did not receive, or the love that they did not know how to offer, and the love they withheld. And they talked about how they learned what love is, and what love is not. And so often he said that people in the last moments of their life will call up for a parent, dad, maybe even more, mother. If God is love, and we believe that to be true, then we learn about God, says this hospice chaplain. We learn about God when we learn about love. And the first and usually the last classroom of love is the family. Now, here's where Jesus takes it to a whole other level. And this is why I wanted to quote this article. Like, that's what Jesus does. Jesus does that all the time. He just takes things to a whole other level. Because, yes, Jesus says love is the only thing that will really matter in the end. But then he gives us this new definition of family. Family for Jesus becomes a whole lot bigger. Our family for Jesus now includes not just blood family, but people around us in our communities. And Jesus said, because they too are made in the image of God, they too are God's children, all of us come from the same parent. And it breaks God's heart when they suffer, just as it would break your heart if your son or your daughter or your sister or your father was suffering. And so Jesus says, take your love out onto the streets and invite the people in, because your family just got a whole lot bigger. All that will matter in the end is love for family. And Jesus said, everything I'm about is the sharing of love for family. And Jesus said, a huge part of how that happens is giving to the poor. Sounds so simple, but for Jesus that was so important. First of all, you redefine family. Second of all, you just remember to give to the poor. Give to the poor. Jesus said it over and over. I'm here to help the poor, to give sight to the blind, to release the oppressed. It's a big family now, and if you follow me, I call you to go and do likewise. Mother Teresa had a favorite Bible passage. It's about where you find Jesus in the world, in Matthew 25. I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was in prison and you visited me. I is Jesus, right? This is about how to find Jesus in the world. And if we find Jesus in the world, then we find God in the world. I was naked and you clothed me. I had nowhere to live and you took me in. And we could add to that. I was bullied and you came to my defense. I was laughed at and persecuted, and you told me I was precious and you loved me. I tell you the truth, Jesus says, whatever you do for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you do it for me. And so whatever issues we talk about in this church, and whatever Christian communities talk about things like gay rights and abortion and what people are going to be saved and what people are not going to be saved, and those are all important issues. But if we miss over 2,000 verses of scripture in both the Old and New Testaments that talk about caring for the poor, and whatever it is we're into here, if we ignore what Jesus is really about, and this is what he's really about, helping poor and oppressed people, we've missed the message of Jesus. That's where the face of God is. Simple. So let's be happy today that we have a way to know who God is. That should make us happy. Mystery solved. We have a way to know who God is. And it's good news, because God is Jesus, and Jesus is love. And family is here. But family is also out there. And that shouldn't be a frightening thing. It shouldn't be a frightening thing for us. It's a promise for us that the love that we are now a part of just got a whole lot bigger. It's a promise. Rob's here to sing for us. This is a beautiful song, and Haven's going to sing some harmony. So we thank them, as always, for their service in that way. And just pass those plates to the people behind.